Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Stories of Scotland, a podcast where we swim in the seas of Scottish history, mythology and culture. I'm Annie.
And I'm Jenny. And this water is freezing, Annie. It's also a dangerous spot for a paddle, as this week we're looking at illicit, illegal water. The water of corruption. Fire water. Or as we also know it, Uiscavea. The water of life. Whiskey.
Yes, of course. But this whiskey isn't coming from just anywhere. We are going to the Shebeen. Now, the Shebeen is essentially an illegal whiskey house.
Woo!
And I first learnt of Shebeens in Nucleus, the Nuclear Caithness archives, which are up in Wick.
Okay.
Now, I was looking through police constable archives, which I find really intriguing because I like to look at historic crimes.
What's like a classic historic crime? Breaking the spokes on someone's wagon wheels?
Well, one of the more common crimes in Wick was sailors, or men who were meant to be part of a ship's crew, refusing to go back to sea. And then the law would have to step in.
And just push them onto the boat? It's like the reverse of a gangplank. You're going back on that boat plank.
Or they'd find them or lock them up.
Either or.
Anyway, one time I was deep in a Victorian Northern Constabulary criminal charges book.
Wow.
Which is the record of all of the crimes of Caithness. And I found a reference to a Shebeen.
Wow, okay.
It was actually quite a sad reference because right below it was a wee boy named Jolly Roger, or Roger Jolly, who had been charged for throwing snowballs at a policeman, which seems
that
terribly unfair for poor little Roger Jolly.
Is that because he was meant to be getting back on the boat, Annie, and he was not Jolly Roger? He was Raging Roger.
So in stunning, swirling letters, I learnt that in the dark winter of 1865, when it was indeed snowing, Isabel Jack, a 40-year-old widow, was charged with keeping a Shebeen. She was fined £5 for this crime. And that was me hooked. I wanted to know the story of Shebeens, this secret illicit bar, and everything about it.
Well, we know that the word Shebeen is imported from Ireland, coming from the Irish Gaelic, Shebeen, and meaning illicit whiskey. And if there's one special trait that both Ireland and Scotland share, it's blow your top off strong home brew and illegal whiskey. The Shebeen and illicit whiskey go hand in hand. From brewing to selling, they are both completely hidden from the prying gazes of authorities and the taxes that they impose. The illicit whiskey still and the Shebeen are the mavericks of the public house.
Yes, and I find myself really bewitched by this little piece of Gaelic culture, especially because Shebeens are all but gone from Scotland nowadays.
Yes, all but gone.
Oh no, Jenny, you're not Shebeening again, are you?
No. Just don't go in the garage for a couple of months. But people would go to drink whiskey in the garage, in the Shebeens, because it was a lot cheaper than the licensed public houses.
Yes, it was. Or the pubs as we know them nowadays.
Yes, pubs. People running Shebeens avoided the taxes that were imposed upon pubs by the government. But That means that they also couldn't purchase legal alcohol, and so often served their own homemade homebrew. Plus, nothing makes whiskey taste better than a little bit of misbehaviour. The riskiness of the shebeen enhances the flavour.
Well, it would need to be a risky cocktail, Jenny, because raw homebrew tastes pretty dreadful.
Well, you'll just have to find out in a couple months. Whiskey has been distilled in Scotland for centuries, with the first written evidence of whiskey found in 15th century Exchequer rolls. These are the records that ensure the royal finances were getting their fair cut of money from taxes and justice. Now, it's likely that the distillation of whiskey goes back way before this. We know mead, an alcoholic beverage made with honey, was popular with the Vikings and the Celts. The technique for whiskey, however, is thought to have come from French winemaking.
So I think the distilling techniques that are being shared throughout Europe in this medieval period are coming from the monasteries, who are using alcohol for both medicinal and ceremonial purposes. And of course, like you say, you have honey mead in circulation. You have any of the alcohols that you could make from berries, from apples. Medieval Brits would be brewing cider. There's probably some English wines going around.
Ah, but for wines you need grapes, and they have no chance of survival in the Scottish climate. So barley was used instead.
Yes, and once we've got the barley, the only other ingredients for some wonderful whiskey are yeast and the purest spring water. That's it. And over the centuries, the same three simple ingredients have not changed. From barley, water and yeast comes the defining drink of our small nation, whiskey.
There's some people down at Bar Drinks who would like to fight you on that one, Annie. Not only have the ingredients not changed, but the distillation process itself has also remained fairly constant. For those of you who are unfamiliar with distillation, it is the process of making whiskey. First, the barley is malted, so germinated, and then dried and ground down into a fine flour-like substance called grist. The grist is then mashed up with water, which creates a lovely brown mixture called wort. Yeast is added to the wort and the fermentation begins. Here, the sugars which have been created during the process are converted into alcohols, just what we're after. After 3 or 4 days, the mixture, which is now called wash, is about 9% alcohol and ready for distillation. At this point, the wash is heated in a still, which separates the alcohol from the wash by evaporation. The alcohol vapours are then cooled and condensed down to create a clear spirit, which is about 72% alcohol.
Wow, Jenny, from worst to wash, that's a lot of names for things.
It is, yes. But basically, it's barley plus water plus yeast and heat, and you've got yourself the water of life.
Marvellous. And you can't forget the still.
Ah, no.
Stills are copper vessels in which whiskey is heated and cooled. They are at the very heart of any whiskey making. And nowadays, each distillery has uniquely shaped stills, each claiming that their shape is what makes their whiskey superior.
Yes, and if you've ever seen them, these stills are huge contraptions. They sit in the distilleries and each year produce massive amounts of whiskey.
Yes, but the stills that our illegal brewers would have been using were very different. Jenny, here's a picture of one such still. Please, could you describe it for our listeners?
Aha, wow. Okay, so what I'm looking at looks like a modified pizza oven with a sort of bronze jug, an amphora, on top of it. And on top of that is another jug, but upside down. So their two necks are on top of each other, like it's wearing a little jug hat. And then the spout of the jug on top is pointing down and filling into a third jug.
It sounds like you're describing some kind of alchemy here, Jenny, like you're trying to make gold out of water.
It's essentially what they were doing. But ultimately, it looks like a highly sophisticated, lightweight, compact, collapsible, multi-use object that, in my humble podcaster's opinion, is far more impressive than the big modern-day stills. But why are they like this, Annie? Why be made so versatile and small?
Well, they weren't always made this way. For centuries, it was common for families in the rural Highlands to have their own domestic stills, to brew whiskey and beer for their own consumption. Now, the distillation of whiskey was considered a right of man, a right of woman, a right for almost everyone and their dog. And most of this domestic brewing was actually done by women. These stills would have been about 10 gallons and would have been built to stay in just one place.
And would they be using these domestic stills to make whiskey that they would also sell? Or was it just for, like, their own family's drinking?
Kind of. So excess whiskey could be traded for goods, and also many landlords would happily accept whiskey as a currency to pay rent. But it wasn't until 1644 when the government imposed taxes on the sale of spirits in order to fund the Covenant army that smuggling of whiskey really began.
Ah, yes. As taxes went up, the cost of whiskey naturally went up with it. The Highlanders realised that they were in a position to take advantage of this and began undercutting the legal whiskey by avoiding the tax altogether. Within months of the Act being passed, smuggling was in full flow and most of the people on the land were fully behind it, with the lower classes doing the brewing and transporting and the upper classes happily turning a blind eye as this paid the rents. Whiskey! Yay!
But over the next 100 years, the laws got tighter. And the landowners began to resent the industrious smuggling system, which was undercutting many other foreign imports as well. So the first major blow to the illicit whiskey industry of smuggling and homebrew was an act which limited the size of home stills to just 2 gallons, when they used to be 10. Now, the final nail in the whiskey barrel was in 1781, when an act came in which banned all domestic distilling. The following year, almost 2,000 stills were seized from Highlanders. And so, distilling left the home and went into the hills. Now, it's hard enough walking up those glens in modern hiking gear, but can you imagine doing it with a big, cumbersome whiskey still?
Ah, of course. So one of these compact little stills would be much easier to carry up a Scottish mountainside.
Yes, and not just to carry, but also to dismantle and hide if necessary. See, in an attempt to crack down on illegal whiskey making, landowners employed gaugers. Now, these were people who would collect tax on any whiskey distilled and sold on a person's land. The term gauger literally means to gauge or measure an amount. Now, if the whiskey makers got wind of a gauger on his way to rumble their operation, they could quickly and efficiently dismantle and bury their still as though it was never there.
Ah, smart smugglers!
Yes, but the gaugers had their own way of hunting out the whiskey makers. They looked for the smoke coming from the fires needed in the distillation process. However, as well as being able to move their stills, whiskey makers would burn juniper in their fires because it burns with an almost smokeless flame and so wouldn't give away the location of where they were distilling.
Aha! And so begins the thrilling century-long Highland cat-and-mouse chase to distill, smuggle and sell illegal whiskey in Scotland.
Meow!
So, what does a mouse do? Does a mouse squeak? What is a but like if it was a whiskey mouse, it'd be like...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Our first tale takes place in the Ladder Hills. We find a marvellous oral history of a sneaky shebeen, which was recorded in the 1950s. It's a recording of James Taylor, who was a resident of the area, and he recalled smuggling history. The Ladder Hills lie in the northeast of the Cairngorm National Park, but it wasn't a national park back in those days. In the late 1700s to the early 1900s, locals would take advantage of the isolation and remoteness offered by some of the braes of the Ladder Hills and establish whiskey stills.
Ooh.
The illicit whiskey was smuggled out of the hills using a large number of remote and little-known hill tracks.
And one such smuggling track was called Ladder Road, and it winds deep into the far reaches of Glen Nochty. And James Taylor's great-grandmother, Eppie Lucky Thane, lived there. Lucky was a well-known character in Glenlivet and the surrounding area, and she lived up in this glen in a wee house.
Well, I've seen it described less as a house and more as a kind of hovel, a little shack. And it wasn't so much that she lived there. She more, as the stories go, kind of squatted there.
Yes, well, the Earl of Fife, who owned the land at the time, hired a man named Duff to evict all of his tenants from the land in order to put sheep there instead. Classic story. And luckily, our Lucky was one of these evictees, and so was left with nowhere to go. So, she built a wee ramshackle house overnight. By morning, there was smoke rising from the chimney of the house. And at this time, it was said that if there was smoke coming out of the chimney of a house built overnight, then the person inside could not be evicted again.
Well, Jenny, this definitely isn't Scots law. It was more of a kind of folklore law.
Okay, well, even if Duff had tried to say this to her, she had a counter-argument. For she had built the house in the fork of a river splitting, which she claimed was a no-man's land.
This definitely isn't how property law works, Jenny.
Well, luckily it worked for Lucky, for she had defied the Earl and his man Duff, and from then on the house/hovel was known as Duff's Defiance to the locals, who were all massive fans of her actions.
I mean, you work in land management, surely you know that if you build a house on a river fork, you can't just claim it as your own land.
I think if you say it with confidence and you're waving a pitchfork, Duff technically cannot get you out.
True. But it does certainly seem as though she had luck on her side, being allowed to stay mm-hmm. there. Or maybe it was just the natural moat around her.
Or the alligator she put in it that she got from the wee manny down the pub.
Now, I've heard the story of Lucky too, and there were definitely no alligators in it.
Maybe a kelpie or two. Well, whatever the reason, she was allowed to stay in her little house and tried to get by with whatever she had left, which was a cow. So, being a natural entrepreneur, she milked the cow and made cheese to sell. From this, she also spotted a gap in the market and decided to sell bread to pair with this fine cheese of the glens. But she did realise this wasn't quite going to cut it. So she decided to expand again and began to sell large quantities of illegal whiskey.
Is that where you got that large delivery of Camembert, Jenny?
It's Gouda.
Well, that's perfect for pairing with cheese and bread, illicit whiskey.
If you like your bread and cheese tasting like burning hot fire, then yes, no better pair in the glen. And so Duff Defiance became known for selling average cheese but great aquavitae, and was soon a well-established shebeen. Now, if one day someone who Lucky didn't recognise came into the shebeen, she had to be cautious about selling them whiskey, for it could be an undercover gauger. She'd lay down the bread and the cheese and wait for them to ask for a dram. Now, she had two options for this. What's it gonna be, boys? A half gill or a gill? Or, in other words, an eighth of a pint or a quarter of a pint. Or, in other words again, a big dram or a massive dram. And if the customer turned out to be a gauger and tried to arrest her for this illegal sale of whiskey, well, she'd just say that she'd charged them for the bread and cheese and the dram was on the house. Well, the dram was on the hovel.
Yes, she was a smart woman, but these tactics would have been employed by many of the Shebeens, each with its own techniques for evading the gaugers. In one historic account of a Shebeen in Glasgow, they labelled all of their whiskey as vinegar and ooh, lime juice.
Ooh. Imagine mixing that one up on the fish and chips.
So if the gaugers came in, they could say, we have no alcohol here, we only sell lime juice.
Ah, see, interesting tactics. But they weren't always necessary. There's a tale of the police heading up to Luckey's one Sunday afternoon. When this news spread around the town, a suitor, or a shoemaker, rushed up the glen to see for himself what would become of Luckey. But he was too late. As he was on his way up, he ran into the two policemen winding their way down. However, Luckey wasn't with them. In astonishment, he exclaimed, "Well, I thought you were up to arrest her!" And the policeman replied with a hiccup and a giggle, "Ah, the woman must have some way of making a living." Apparently Duff Defiance was very busy on a Sunday.
Wow, so she even had the police drinking?
No, they were just a big fan of her cheese and bread.
Clearly, that's what got them hiccupping.
Now, while Luckey sold illegal whiskey, she didn't distill it herself. Round the back of her shebeen, she had a space for 16 whiskey anchors.
Ah, yes. So an anchor is the whiskey cask of the time, usually able to hold about 8 gallons, around 30 litres, which is a lot of whiskey, round the back of Luckey's hovel. Surely someone would notice these huge containers.
Ah, well, she had space for 16 anchors to be buried. And legend has it that some of these have never been dug up. So Annie, do you fancy a wee trip up to Glennochty? You, me, a shovel, 2 pint glasses?
Jenny, imagine a malt that is aged by 150 years, just sitting in the bog, ripe for the drinking.
Aye, it's your bog standard 300% alcohol whiskey.
Now, if Luckey wasn't making the whiskey, where was it all coming from, Jenny?
Ah, this whiskey was flowing out of the glens, for there were up to 200 compact and hidden distilleries deep in the recesses of these hills. So I'm sure she had no supply issues. And in fact, what made Luckey so successful was that her little shebeen was located on the Ladder Road, one of the secret smuggling tracks that many of the distillers of the area travelled. So as the men would pass on their way to sell whiskey in the bigger towns, they'd lighten their load for the ponies and take an anchor from their wagon and sell it to Luckey on the way.
Hi, Luckey.
Hey.
And this whiskey that Luckey was selling was much desired compared to the legal whiskey available. You know, shop local. Especially coming from this area, which was regarded as the stronghold for Scottish illegal distilling. The whiskey that was being sold would have been possibly up to 70% ABV. So it was much stronger than the legal whiskey. To put it into context, most whiskies these days are around 43% ABV.
Oh, Annie, this stuff was rocket fuel.
Yes, it was also pure, so it wasn't mixed with water or weaker whiskies, which the legal stuff often would have been. In a letter to the Inverness Courier in 1930, a reader wrote,
"Era, it is notorious that the spirit distilled by the smugglers is infinitely more wholesome, of a finer flavour, and in every way more highly prized than the licensed whisky, eh?"
As someone who's quite local to this area, I'm really offended by that accent, Jenny.
I have been living here for 2 years and that's where I got the Inverness accent.
So Luckey's Shebeen was a place for locals to gather and drink cheap, strong and tasty whisky. But she was still operating in a rural place, so where was the whisky heading once it left the protection of the lands of the Ladder Hills?
It was going where the demand was, which was just about everywhere in Scotland. But from this area, it was mainly heading to the settlements in Aberdeenshire and beyond into the far Highlands. but it wasn't as easy as walking into town with ponies laden with barrels of whiskey and selling it. They had to be more subtle than that.
Well, the smugglers would usually travel in convoys so that they were able to protect themselves from the attack of the gauger. I imagine there was nothing subtle about these large groups of Highland folk wandering into town.
Ah, but Annie, they are professional smugglers. Subtle is their middle name. And do you know what every smuggler's surprise subtle trick is?
Are they good at distractionary card tricks?
Not quite. Sheep bladders.
Oh, Danny, I know that the high alcohol would kill the bacteria, but this makes my skin crawl just thinking about putting whiskey inside a sheep's bladder.
Ugh, don't be silly, Annie. It adds depth and flavour. It's where the famous saying, a wee dram, comes from.
I don't even understand that, Jenny, but that's definitely incorrect.
A wee dram. Like it's in a bladder, so wee.
Oh. Oh, that's such a bad joke.
Oh, honey, so naive. But yes, the smugglers would get to the edges of town where they had elaborate underground distribution networks set up in collaboration with the locals. The locals would know when the smugglers were arriving and meet them in a hidden spot. Here, they would decant the whiskey into sheep bladders. This bit is true. And hide them in all sorts of places. They'd hang them under women's skirts, they'd put them under men's top hats, and even smuggle them in, like pregnant bellies.
Wow, people will go to such extreme extents for a wee dram.
Hey, now you're getting it.
Anyway, let's get back to the oral history, Jenny. James Taylor, the man who told this story, he had been a soldier in the First World War, and he explained that even the whiskey for the sergeant's mess down in England came from this area. So he seems to have had whiskey trickle from the northeast of Scotland to different corners of his life, wherever he was in the world.
And no doubt it had been in a bladder or two on its journey to him, where it ended up in a bladder once more.
Jenny!
It's the circle of the water of life, Annie. Truly beautiful.
Well, Jenny, I am highly concerned. I suspect that you may be slightly morally corrupt and running an illegal bar in our garage.
Annie, no, it's a perfectly legal cheese and bread bar.
Well then, even more reason to go up to Sutherland, where we'll learn about the reasons why a certain minister, Reverend Grant, was concerned about the state of shebeens in Helmsdale. For anyone who hasn't had the fortune of visiting Helmsdale, it's on the far northeast coast of Scotland. So, Jenny, you need to be a concerned citizen writing to the John O'Groat Journal in 1899.
Helmsdale Shebeening. Sir, the entire community of the two parishes of Loth and Kildonan feel themselves under a debt of gratitude to the Reverend Mr. Grant for denouncing the insidious curse of shebeening, which has this community firmly grasped in its toils. He referred to this subject from the pulpit and showed the evils arising to parents and families from having such facilities for getting drink at all hours. This situation, I believe, has been going on for years, but latterly it has become so outrageously public that someone needs to start the campaign against the evil inside these places and the vile staff which they pay their good money to. In Helmsdale, there are two shebeens which probably dispose of much spirits. There is more drink consumed in the most disgusting and degrading manner than ever in the days of license. Anyone can see the whiskey in small or large casks taken to these places. It is not even done secretly, but openly and fearlessly. Still, it is not too late if this matter is taken up in a firm manner by the authorities, who ought to have checked its progress long ago. Yours, very teetotal, big old killjoy observer.
Thanks, Jenny. added a couple of words in when describing yourself at the end there, I see.
I was just embodying the character I'm playing.
So this was quite a curious letter from a concerned person of Helmsdale at the end of the 1800s.
Curious slash furious, am I right?
I think this is going in with themes of the temperance movement, which would have been really popular at the time. Now, the temperance movement came over from America. It was essentially trying to encourage the whole population to quit alcohol completely, to abstain and become teetotal.
Is that where teetotal comes from? Temperance?
Yes.
Cool.
But it's a really fascinating movement, which has very interesting links to all kinds of other social movements and reforms of the 1800s. And they actually have some really catchy wee songs.
Oh, it's like how they teach you not to cross the road when there's cars coming with little hedgehogs.
Yes, with singing hedgehogs. But the temperance movement of the 1800s would do it with magic lantern slides. They get big groups of people together in a hall. They'd show them a magic lantern show about how great it was to abstain from alcohol. And then they'd teach them a bunch of really catchy modern songs about how drink is bad. A lot of the slides that they'd show people were kind of scare tactics.
Ooh, is it like, this is what will happen to you if you drink a pint of whiskey, and then it's just a picture of a regular Scottish person.
Jenny, you are offending our proud country.
I think I'm making our proud country prouder.
It would be something like a man is supposed to be working, but instead he goes to the pub. Mm. He comes home and then his children can't afford to eat.
Mm.
And then he dies of a condition relating to alcohol.
Wow, that sounds like a kind of fun family night out. At least you get to sing some songs. But I'm not sure that any song is catchy enough to stop me drinking my Prosecco, Annie. So our concerned citizen isn't really arguing against the Shebeen for tax reasons. They seem more worried about the moral and ethical activities of people who are drinking wildly strong home-brewed alcohol in the Shebeens. They're worried about the behaviour of the people who are able to afford cheap alcohol after they've bought it and consumed it.
Yes, so I included this example because I think that the 1800s and the temperance agenda start to play a role in how we view alcohol from a moral perspective in Scotland, seeing drunkenness and the Shebeen as a gateway to other crimes and misbehaving. And as well, the temperance movement is a kind of turning point for starting to see alcohol consumption as being unhealthy. Even nowadays, part of the reason that alcohol is so expensive in Scotland is because of government intervention to try to encourage people to drink less of it.
Okay.
So studies show us that the cheaper that booze is, the more likely people are to drink it to excess. So I do think it's a good thing that there are a lot of initiatives trying to control Scotland's alcohol problems, because we do have them, and trying to encourage a culture of drinking within moderation. And as strange as it sounds, I see some of this rooted within the temperance movement.
Definitely.
However, when I look at Shebeens of the past, I find them very important places culturally. And I also find it really hard not to enjoy imagining the wee village of Helmsdale with illegal alcohol flowing around.
Well, there's definitely something about Shebeens that makes me think of rebellion and freedom and evading tax.
Aye, there's something very subversive about them. They make me think of bothies and brew and these kind of informal get-togethers
that often end up with something on fire. I have noticed.
Maybe Reverend Mr. Grant did have a point about cutting out Shebeens to stop crime.
Ah, well, either way, whiskey wouldn't be what it is today if it were not for the humble Shebeen. So, sorry, Reverend Mr. Grant, Sir Window Curtain Twitcher Man.
Overall, I think the story of illegal whiskey, the story of the Shebeen itself, tells us a lot about the undercurrents of Scottish culture. The Shebeen existed as a place to avoid tax, a place for secrets, and a place for homebrew.
And I really, really love the story of Eppie Lucky Thane and her Shebeen. She hid the Shebeen as a way of earning money and providing a sanctuary for people to drink. Her story is one of perseverance more than anything. She was prepared to stand up for her Shebeen and fight off the gaugers whenever they arrived, slash give them a lot of whiskey. She'll take that hit financially.
Yes, Lucky Thane was brilliant. Plus, I was really surprised when I saw that Shebeens were not only popular in Ireland and Scotland. So Britain and Scotland have a really shameful history of colonisation, and this means that we can find some Gaelic words in some very unexpected places.
Okay.
So, for example, under apartheid in South Africa, Indigenous Africans were banned from entering bars. So industrious black African women opened up Shebeens.
Hey!
These women were known as Shebeen Queens.
I love it.
And they offered a place for activists to meet and plan, and for Indigenous South Africans to celebrate their culture, which I think is the ultimate spirit of the Shebeen, and I love that it has become popular in South Africa in this way.
And the Shebeen culture can also be found sprinkled in the history of America and Canada, brought by Irish and Scottish colonial and diaspora communities. And I know in some states, and possibly our garage, moonshine brewing is still a very popular hobby.
Also Australia, I think. But wherever they are in the world, I find myself fascinated with the Shebeen because these places feel like a kind of hidden underbelly of whiskey. Nowadays, when I think of whiskey, I think of big fancy tours around the giant distilleries.
Mm.
However, what I love about the Shebeen is it's a more intimate dram, you know, the forbidden drink that tastes better.
Yes, though based on some of the homebrew that your family has provided us with, we know that the illicitness of drink does not equate to its deliciousness.
Jenny, I am taking great offence at this. There is no finer turnip wine in all of the land.
Mm.
Our turnip wine was aged for 25 years, I'll have you know.
Well, yes, but the reason there's no finer turnip wine in all the land, Annie, is because no one else brews turnip wine. It was terrible. And the reason that it's 25 years old is it was so bad back then that no one drunk it, which is why it still haunts this earth and was gifted to us to try.
Oh, Annie, I'm the ghost of the tragic turnip, distilled into something even more ghastly than a neep.
Stop being...
It's a nip of a neep.
Oh, no, Jenny.
Someone give me a nip of that neep wine.
Cut out the creepy neepy, Jenny. So I found a poem to end on. It's by John Milne of Glenlivet, and it's all about illegal whiskey, actually set in the area where Lucky Thane's Shebeen existed.
Here comes an officer of excise, the Highland smugglers did despise, and got preventative men to rise, to survey their glens in the morning. We'll make them submit unto our will, we'll burn their bothies in the hill. We'll seize their whisky, every gill, among Nochty Glen in the morning. But I give advice here to excise men, that nearer home should he remain. Don't venture for the sake of gain, to survey these hills in the morning. Though you hoist your flag of distress, you'll find their courage none the less. We'll meet you in the Highland dress, among Nochty Glens in the morning. So may their cattle sell and country thrive, to be as happy men as now alive. And may they brew their whisky 2 to 5 among Nochty Glens in the morning. And if good-hearted men do but pass by, they are the lads we'll not deny, to give them a drink if they be dry among Nochty Glens in the morning. But our gentlemen surveyed the hills, and sore destroyed our smuggling stills, made their tenants submit unto their wills among Nochty Glens in the morning.
Yes, this poem goes on and actually seems to end by inciting another Jacobite rising.
Ah, that's probably when you know you've had one too many drams. Or maybe that you just need one more.
Well, on that note, let's ourselves have a wee dram to our wonderful Patreons.
Yes, thank you all so much for subscribing to our Patreon. We are really excited to be bringing you more mini myths, 5-minute fairy tales, and other bits of content. So, without further ado, thank you so much, Kevin and Tadam Riddle.
Pawpaw the Selkie, great to know that we have support from the magical seal community.
We got big downloads in the ocean. Dominika Malinowski,
Sarah
and Sarah,
Chris and Anne,
and David Phelps. We are so grateful for you all becoming our patrons and supporting our wee podcast. If you at home would also like to join up and help support us, then please go to patreon.com/storiesofscotland.
Or you can also support us by rating the podcast and leaving us a wee review, because it helps other people to find us and hear these strange Scottish stories in the Shebeen with us. Thank you all so much for listening to Stories of Scotland. Slán Javá.
Slán Javá. It used to be that the locals in Aberdeenshire would laugh at anyone who added water to their whiskey to make it more palatable, because they knew the secret was to water it down with sheep wee.
Jenny, absolutely no one did this. This is a factual history podcast and you're just making this up now.
We are also a podcast filled with myths, and I'm just trying to get some of my own myths into the mix. The very dodgy whiskey wee mix.
And what would you call this mythological drink, Jenny?
Ooh, a lamb dram. Listeners, you can't see Annie hold her head in her hands.